Well, beautiful morning. It's Monday. There's a lot of things that go through your mind in the morning. Incidentally, this is Jason Enro. You are listening to Cohen Meanderer. I am looking up. I'm driving toward the moon. And the moon, we're just coming out of a new moon. So there's just a little strip of light, and it was really big before. It's gotten up a little higher, so it isn't as big as it once was. But it brings to mind yet again that that one needs to find some joy in the journey. Pardon me. And I struggle with this. I imagine a lot of people struggle with it. I'm not this morning, and I'm glad. I know what today is going to be primarily comprised of. And I'm I'm grateful for the things that I have. Grateful for the possibilities before me. The job I have currently, I get paid rather well, Not too tough, demanding. Yeah, not too. I'm thankful for everything I'm given. The Lord takes wonderful care of me, and. Wow, I either find myself either not having much to say or thinking too much. It's always one or the other. But the moon reminds me to take joy in every state. We're just coming out of the new moon. We haven't gotten to the quarter moon yet. And the full moon is yet to come. Time passes, which is always good for me. I look forward to being able to concentrate better on some of the things I do. Like right now, I'm in the middle of Ether 4, which is, that's a book in the Book of Mormon, and it's chapter 4, and it, a good portion of it, the fact I'm poking through, is while Moroni was, I guess, transcribing the 24 plates that he got of the Jaredites, and he's just, as far as I recall, this will probably be among the last we'll hear of the brother of Jared. So you only get about three chapters of the brother of Jared, but they're so meaty. There's so much in them. So much to be learned about. I guess people call it the character of God. And what I'm getting out of just a beginning kind of scratching at chapter 4, getting another view of the Lord's blessing and watch care over those that follow him, those who are obedient, those who, and some of the things that one needs to be obedient to. You know, one of the big things from the brother of Jared is the importance of praying to God. God chastised the brother of Jared at one point because he had failed to pray with God. You know, there was the big flurry of don't let our language be confounded at the when getting us out of the Tower of Babel situation. Don't confound the language of our friends. And he said, I'll take you to a promised land. I'll take you to a place that I've set aside for those who will obey me. And it starts happening, and they go, and then apparently they got to a reasonably nice place. I don't know why England comes to mind so often, but I guess it kind of does. Seems to be a common launching off place for many groups. I don't think I don't know if that was true, probably not, of Nephi, Lehi's group. They went south and Indian Ocean voyage. But anyway, so they had kind of gotten away from things. And it talks about a little bit about the barges and that they had used these to cross many waters. And it does say, well, they must have ended up on some island. And you go, well, what's the most likely candidate of an island across many waters from the land of Babel, which would have been in the Middle East? And you go, you know, this is for my money, I would say it would be something like England or Ireland or something along those lines. Some place that is sufficiently distant enough that one feels like one has gotten away from those people and God didn't like too much congregating because it tended to lead to evil people taking control and exercising authority over large groups and doing construction projects, doing things that are counter God. And it seems like it attracts number one, it attracts evil people who want power. And so that was why the Tower of Babel, the languages were confused, was to break people up, make them go away in different directions, spread across the land. They were congregating too much. And not congregating in a good way. I find it interesting because in almost every case, one of God's blessings is to those who follow him is that they will have, great posterity. This is something that happened to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, how they would have nations. Now, back in the day, there weren't large nations particularly. These weren't huge things in huge places. Regardless, though, makes one wonder what circumstances become. It seems like when people are big enough that they feel like they can take care of themselves without God, that's when they start getting into trouble. So, and it harkens back to me in the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. There was a lot of community building. There was a certain amount of gathering to the various places that the church was founded. And this had a lot to do, I think, with it being very small and it needing to have that nexus to be able to draw strength from each other. I remember going on my mission, and one of our like ward mission leaders was a young fella, late 20s, early 30s sort of fella. And he had heeded the very last vestiges of the call to come to Utah. And to build up, it was, you know, the whole thing was, well, we're going to build up Zion. And you go, you know, that's a good thing. Can I be honest? I think Utah has gotten big enough and troubling enough that it's starting to have the problems that having too many people is going to have. And that this spate of temple building, first with President Hinckley, he built a lot of temples, and then nothing compared to what President Nelson has been doing, where now we have over 300 either built or in construction or announced temples. And it's amazing. And that these are indicative of the fact that we're not supposed to congregate too much. Too many Latter-day Saints in too many places start getting weird. Can I say that about? And that's one of the things about Utah. And I did an essay about this. One of the essays that's really caught fire and gotten many, many reads is the whole idea of getting yourself out of Utah. And we need to have Melchizedek priesthood holders accessible to the world. And that means you need to be there. We can't do blessings. We cannot bless the world in the service that priesthood is supposed to do. If we're all bunched up, the sending out of missionaries is an interesting thing. There's a thought that might end soon with the time of the Gentile, that these things might end, and the work that we do as missionaries it's already been changing much more towards service. Even for proselyting missionaries, it seems like there's getting to be a lot more service to it. And the distinction between a service missionary and one called from other places is interesting. I don't know if we'll ever fully get rid of missionaries being sent out because of the Utah factor. So many people clumped up in one space, and it's like, oh my gosh, we've got so many people. And it becomes the whole thing of, well, what do you do when service opportunities can be done out further? We had one young fella who was a younger brother of a young man who taught at our local vocational school for a while. And he had gone on a mission to Mongolia, and it wasn't really much a proselyting mission. It was teaching English to people. Now, they would do some proselyting, but by and large, it was to go and fulfill this need that Mongolia had, that the church said, we can send people over that can teach you guys English. And that was proto service missionary. And I have a feeling that things are going more and more toward doing kind of a fusion of both of those kinds of things. And of course, I'm sorry, in the whole thing of getting out of Utah, it isn't just having a little 2 year or so experience of being out and about. It ends up being, to say, once you get out of Utah, you go, my advice is, don't come back. We've just been, Lisa was telling me about some information about one of her progenitors, Irish seaman, who in the 1700s, or the late 1600s, early 1700s, was part of a group that was going from Ireland over to what became Nova Scotia in Canada. And he married one of the local girls, became quite prosperous and famous, had a hill named after him. And of course, there was the clearances of the French Acadians, which she was a French Acadian, and of course, you know, there was many wars between France and England, and they also manifested in Maritime Canada, and they were expelled from those lands. Now, not all of them were successfully expelled. There's still French speakers there, but where some of the battles were the hottest, the French left, and Lisa's family was one that went to Louisiana. And these people ended up being Lisa's family. But, you know, it was an Irish guy who came, and the whole thing was he married a local girl, you know, and their family and how that went. And Roger, which became quite a prominent last name, was actually the first name of this Irish sailor. And I try and it was interesting to read. Let me tell you, there was a family association. I don't know if there is much of one anymore. You know, people get excited about something, and some of us keep up with it, and other people don't. It seemed like for about 5 years there, right before the pandemic, such as it is called, right before COVID, that organization was functioning and doing things and gathering, and then after that, it kind of died, which is very, very sad. But it's just another indication of people going from one place where things weren't going so well to a place that was going better, and people carving out a new life there with new circumstances, a new life, a new world. And so I did that essay on saying, you know what, you need to get out of Utah. It says it's having smaller groups, smaller communities is better. I am made a little troubled by our little branch becoming a ward. I think I kind of like the branch style. As it got bigger, I didn't think much of it. Now it was fine. People would get baptized, and then they would do other things. Part of the issue of Tucum Carey, and let me tell you, we have meetings. We just had one yesterday. Our ward council, and it's a feature, and I brought it up. You know, I'm the person that talks about things that probably shouldn't be said, and I say that a lot. You know, I'm just that type. As I grow older, I become less and less politically correct. And it was, says Tucum Carey's a tough town. All I can say is people who put in their lot with Tucum Carey are going to struggle. And I am not made unhappy by people trying to improve their lot by basically getting out of it. There is not much growth. There is not much opportunity. I had to go other places to boost myself up, and I still am. You know, I'm not working in Tucum Carey. I'm not working. You know, I'm working in Amarillo, much larger town with much more possibilities. There's a lot more going on. I've worked in Albuquerque, and I've ranged out quite a bit. I've kind of taken advantage of the fact that it's really hard to get skilled labor in isolated places. A lot of skilled labor want to have all the trinkets of big town living. I'm not into that particularly. The world's getting interesting in that you can have a decent number of the perks of big places when you have an internet connection that's reasonably fast and Amazon, to be honest, or things that try to compete with it. Shipping is low cost still, and that makes it so that you can bring big town things into a little town that can't have it. Like our local grocery store is quite expensive, and and the selection is getting worse and worse, especially with Lisa's interesting diet. And it's so, although you can have all these wonderful things brought to you or available to be traded, it isn't a big deal. The life of an expatriate is interesting. Sometimes I almost feel like that I need to show my adult children that they can go to other places and do other things and find other worlds to be a part of. Congregating in the United States of America for purely economic reasons, I think, has some downsides. I think when I hear recordings of people saying that the United States what's a good word to say for it? That the United States is probably in its autumn and it's starting to fall apart, and it is for just being decadent, and even though I'm quite heartened by Donald Trump and his rhetoric about making America great again, that really has more to do with, you know, I'm not very excited about other circumstances. Oh well, I'm not excited about the basic direction this thing goes. Too much corruption. Not that small places don't have their possibilities of corruption, but we are in need of expansion, better things, being able to do more and be more, and not to behave like an expatriate, to integrate with the local culture. Now, do I want to do that too, Carrie? No, and we didn't, because it's not interesting to us to have that. Well, anyway. I find the whole situation really quite interesting. I think that this is just going to be a personal one because, to be honest, I've got too many breaks in here, as I think. And I was sitting here thinking about, because I've looked at places Pitcairn Island, and their circumstances and what they had to do to survive these mutineers. And they've gotten to the point to where they really want to repopulate. You go, well, let's see what that entails. Let's see what that can do for life, for what needs to happen. Well, anyway, so the Isles of the Sea, It's a wonderful metaphor for the whole thing of separating oneself from too much congregated junk, and what we I'm sorry. Yeah, this is a bad recording. Personal recording gone kind of goofy. So I'm going to end it here. We're not going to end it with the priestly blessing or anything like that, because it just went kind of kablooey. And it's interesting because I would like my own children to range out and to go to more interesting places with possibilities. Wanting the priestly aspect to be better realized with my children, you know, my sons especially, and then my daughters. So, yeah, just need to stop that. This thing needs to stay a personal one. Talk to you later.